This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Fusatsu, Renewal Vows Ceremony. And I'd like to look at tonight the heart's intention and its relationship to the renewal of our vows, how we are in the world, what is intention, what needs our attention, inattention. This is a quote from the Dhammapada. Mind is the forerunner of all things. If one speaks or acts with an impure mind, suffering follows, like the wheel that follows the foot of the ox. Mind is the forerunner of all things. If one speaks or acts with a pure mind, happiness follows, like the shadow that never leaves. So Fusatsu is a new encounter with ourselves of a loving kind. It's about wisdom and compassion. It allows us to renew being in love with every aspect of ourselves and our life again, and our intention to live in harmony. It's translated as continuous good practice, or to cease from unwholesome actions, which is the theme of our Anga, refrain from unwholesome actions, where we can bear the truth, where our world is made fresh and strong again in our intention. And because intention plays such a critical role in the unfolding of our lives, I think it's an interesting question, at least for me, to ask about what is intention. The monastics have been having study sessions on the 12 links of codependent origination. This is part of that. I have a choice. Do you have a choice? What is happening when we make a choice? Wise intention or right intention is part of the Eightfold Path. And perhaps, I don't know, to the most important one, that we have a right intention. The precepts express our intention as practitioners of a loving kind, to not harm living beings, to refrain from what is not given freely, to speak without being abusive or exploitive. In each one is to find a loving action, an action that's in harmony. And that can look, we can't get a picture of what that's supposed to look like. So chanting in the Fusatsu prepares the mind directly for intention, starting with the Gatha of Atonement, all evil karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Now I am at one with it all, so it sets an intention. Sentient beings are numberless. Namu, be one with. So it turns our compass. Be one with the Buddha mind, the awakened mind. Be one with Samantabhadra, compassion, Manjushri, wisdom. All these bodhisattvas, which are none other than this very body and mind. So it, we say, be one with, then we take that in. We take the mind we have and work with it until it begins to bear fruit with good seeds. And bit by bit, they can crowd out the weeds, so to speak, or the entanglements. So becoming aware of intention is key to awakening in our moment-to-moment practice of each situation that calls for our engagement. some inner intention will precede our response. Like if we think about the movement in our body, the major movements, before we shift positions, can we notice the intention in the mind to move? I like to, as I was reading and studying these, I like to refer to the intentions as the about to moment, when we're about to. That's where we have to be very careful and mindful. What are we about to do? When we know what we're about to do something before we do it. Intention is what makes the pattern of karma, of cause and effect. Essentially, intention is karma. Karma, the cause and results of every action, comes from the heart's intention and precedes each action. And what the Buddha taught was one of the most important things we can learn in our meditation is to see cause and effect happen. We are studying refrain from unwholesome action. So when our intentions are kind, the karmic result is very different from when they are greedy or aggressive. If we are not aware, we will unconsciously act out of our habit and fear. If we attend to our intentions, we can notice if they spring from the body of fear or our deliberate thoughtfulness and care. So when we first look at the issue of intention, we might have a sense that it's all just a simple matter of choice. But is it? Is it just a simple matter of choice? And I put a question mark at the end of that. Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe. What is happening when we make choices? I wonder. In Buddhist teachings, the idea of intention carries a different meaning than our everyday language. Because usually we think of intention, I think, as a decision-making process. And in the Dharma practice, it's our actual experience. It's that very subtle urge felt right at the beginning of a movement or an action. And this is hard to see. It's not a thought, though we think of it as a thought. According to the teachings, it is present in every single moment of our experience. Quote, having willed, one acts through body, speech, and mind. So nothing happens without this volitional activity. So in terms of practice, intention is where all the action is at. It is happening right now, in this very moment, whether we're aware of it or not. The intention to listen. I recently was on the food line at the monastery, and there was a little notice that said, please be considerate and take a modest amount. It was avocados, which I love. And so I'm getting to that plate and I see there's not a lot, but I start to wonder, what's my modest amount? And I took a lot because I like it. And then I sat down and like 30 seconds later, I looked at there were still people coming and I had this terrible guilty feeling like I had too many avocados on my plate. And it was really disruptive of my lunch. I couldn't eat in peace because I was now this action I had taken where I could have considered and just waited. And I usually go at the end anyway, but this time I went earlier because I never get the avocados. But if I had more mindful intention, I would have had a more peaceful meal at that moment. So in terms of practice, intention is where all the action is. And it's always changing, just like everything else. In any given moment, there's a whole range of possible things we could be experiencing. Sights, sounds, smells, this bodily sensation, that bodily sensation. Yet only one of them is selected. Attention lands on only one object at a time. And this is due to intention, from what I gather. It determines where our attention is going to land. Every moment, attention wants to go somewhere. It wants to attend to something. Can you get the feeling of it? The Buddha tells us there are six kinds of intention. Three of these are wholesome and three are unwholesome. So the urge to attend to something can manifest with an attached, averse, or deluded flavor, or it can manifest with non-attachment, non-aversion, and non-delusion. This is the difference between the experience of suffering in any given moment or not suffering, based on those six intentions. The quality of intention determines the difference between a moment in heaven and a moment in hell. So if I really want something and I'm attached to getting it and it doesn't happen now or the way I want it, hell. Hell on earth. Or if I want to speak and notice the intention before words come out, I can choose appropriately whether or not to voice that particular thought. And I could ask, is this going to create hell? Or is this going to create heaven? And will that hell be useful? Sometimes it's good to raise hell. So we have to get the larger picture. Not only is this experience in the present, but intention has much to do with how our future unfolds as well. So the choices that we make right now have a momentum. We know about this. We talk about karma as having this momentum. And they establish a pattern. They create a habit or an inclination or a tendency to respond in similar ways in the future. This is what we refer to as karma. Choices lead to actions which establish dispositions from which future choices are made. So this is the cycle of karma that we are looped in and contributing to moment after moment. So that's what Buddha broke through, that self, that perpetuation. But still he had a body. So there's karma. If we look at practice, it's important to remember that we're here by choice. Nobody airlifted us in here today in a straitjacket. We're not here because of our heritage, our parents, institutions. We're here because of ourselves. We begin Zen practice by choice, a movement, and we continue by choice. And as I learn about this cycle, I look for the details in my own life. That's where it's important. So here's another little detail. When Hokyu and I arrived at the temple, we were hungry, we were rooting around, and I found a bag of quinoa black bean chips. So I went to get a scissors to cut the top off the bag so we can start munching. And right in the moment, I had this thought, okay, now you've gone and opened it. I know where this leads. You love these kind of salty chips. You wish you could just lay back and keep eating all of them. But you know you can't just eat two pieces as you dip your hands into the bag. And I take the first bite and I feel the momentum. Like they are so good. And I know that this is one chip's just going to keep leading to another. And it could just sweep me away. So to save each other, we took stock. We discerned, we closed the bag, we put it to the side, we went out of the kitchen and ate at a table. So we all have our versions of this, and we can begin to see them when we look at our cycles of intention. At every moment, we are standing at a crossroad. We have the option to choose a future that is happy and carefree, or one that perpetuates habits and patterns that we know will lead to more suffering. And sometimes we get used to the second road more often, oddly enough. So I ask, how do I go about turning intention in the direction of goodness and freedom in the face of a momentum that keeps us headed for more difficult states? If it is simply a matter of choice, why don't we do it? So if I understand correctly, intention is not under the control of a self, of self. We don't have control. We don't have the control that we think we have. So this is a very hard thing to get, because we all have this feeling there's somebody in here somewhere running the show, you know, the Wizard of Oz. I put my socks and shoes on. I go and get a drink. I lift my cup and bring it to my mouth. Rather simple. And I think we all have a sense that there is somebody sitting inside our heads. Mission Control, Houston, sitting at some sort of control panel. But on closer examination of our experience, we reveal that intention is not self. What was helpful for me to look at this closer was looking into the teaching of the five aggregates: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. They are the totality of our life, but they don't belong to us. The Heart Sutra tells us this, that such categories aren't real and true. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No independent thing called I to establish the categories. Buddha said, intention is prior to the six senses. To recognize the body is not self. As we practice for a while, we may get a bit of detachment from our physical experience. And I think most of us sense that the body is not under our control. It has its own laws, right? I mean, just look in the mirror. Gray hairs appearing, thicker hairs growing from molds, deepening crevices along our eyes and mouth, sagging skin. It tends to get our attention as we get a little older. You start to think, well, maybe this isn't who I really am. Mindful of body, as the Satipatthana says, body is not self. We can also begin to get a sense that feeling, too, is not who we are, as we are mindful of feeling. Even the possibility of being with things we don't like, or letting go of things that we do like, that grows with practice, doesn't it? We begin to get a sense that our happiness does not depend on feeling. It's okay if pleasant feelings end, and I can bear with the unpleasant feelings. These are not who I am. Feeling is not self. We can notice the same about perception. We begin to get less attached to memories and the associations that the mind makes. For example, the difference between pain as a concept and the actual experience of it. We can just feel the strong sensation. And I think we've probably all had the experience that the idea of pain was enough to make us crazy, let alone the experience of it. So with practice, we come to see the difference between the concept and the experience, the direct experience, that these perceptions are not who we are. Perception is not self. Now, consciousness, we were discussing this in our meeting, is a bit tricky. Buddha spoke of the possibility of seeing consciousness isolated out from the rest of our experience. The possibility of seeing consciousness isolated out from the rest of our experience. So this usually takes a lot of intensive practice to accomplish. Buddha said, we can actually discern the spark of awareness as something other than the content and texture in which it is embedded. For example, when we're looking at something, we're aware of the eye that's looking at it. So you can be aware of this little thing that happens that makes the seeing possible. This is the experience which is seeing pure and simple. In the moment where we can experience this, everything else drops away. There's no me looking at it. There's no it being looked at. The experience is just seeing. And this is what we work on often, just breathing, just seeing, just walking. Even consciousness is not self, the Buddha says. We come to this experience of the mental formations, the volitions. Even these, with practice, we can begin to see our highly conditioned tendencies. And we see what patterns dominate the way we organize our experience. Are we pushing things away all the time and defining our world by what we don't like about it? Are we Miss Piggy, wanting this and that and the other thing to make us feel good about everything? Do we tend to be deluded, topsy-turvy thinking, not really knowing or wanting to know what's going on deep within? Whatever it is, we all have our tendencies and our styles to recognize. We can begin to see the tendencies of the movements. And we can get to see them and be a bit further from me. We can begin to get a sense of, well, that's not who I am either. Buddha said, say this verse when you get really attached. I am not this. This is not me. This is not mine. So when we get really hooked on something, I am not this. This is not me. I am not, this is not mine. It's moving, changing. And if that was who I am, it would be more solid. It would be much more permanent. Mental formations change moment to moment in response to changing conditions. And after a while, that insight starts to sink in and it helps us. Formations are not self. So the Buddha said the illusion of control is the last really deep clinging to a self. We just don't want to let go of the idea that all this experience is not in the control of self, that there is not somebody running it all at mission control. And when we begin to see it for ourselves, we start to get a sense of how compulsive the whole experience of being alive really is. I remember someone saying to me recently, after many, many years of practice, it suddenly struck them like right in the face, and they said, my gosh, it's all compulsion. The sense that intentions just sort of come up on their own and that the movements of our lives are just happening without the control of self. That's a very illuminating insight. Kind of a relief. We can stop beating up on ourselves for doing unskillful things out of habit. It's my karma after all, and it's a given that I will do that. That's the way it is when we're not awake. So that's why we need mindfulness. That is really the key. So we put emphasis on mindfulness. This puts it into perspective why we need to be so mindful. Self is not getting me free. Mindfulness is. We can relax more and pay close attention. These are not truths that can be known by thinking about them. So, some of you are nodding your head. You know what I mean, because you've seen it yourself. You've had that insight. This experience of insight into the nature of intention is arising out of conditions. It is arising in any particular moment based on whatever patterns or habits of mind each of us is accustomed to. To find that the process is rarely conscious and it's almost entirely invisible. Wow. To reflect on that profundity of what the Buddha taught. When we begin studying the Buddha Dharma, we learn about the importance of right intention, part of Buddha's Eightfold Path. This means developing an intention towards spiritual practice that is focused on a clear and direct perception of the nature of reality and the self, and to bring one's life into alignment with that perception, wrote Shugen Sensei, Shugen Roshi. I also wanted to, and this is a whole other piece, but intent versus impact. Because when we're dealing with the ways in which our identities intersect with those around us, and the ways our privileges and our experience of marginalization and oppression intersect, this lesson becomes much larger and more profound. It's really about justice, perhaps. The impact of our actions can be profound and wide-reaching. In fact, in our BFOD group, we don't say, that wasn't my intention, if there's an impact that happened. We need to ask ourselves what might be or what might have been the impact of our actions or words. And we need to step back and listen when we are being told that the impact of our actions is out of step with our intents or our perceptions of self. There are only two things we are responsible for in this practice. Throughout the day, we can ask ourselves if we are being true to our deepest intentions. If not, we can start doing it immediately as best we are, as we are able to. And be assured each time we start over by reconnecting to our intention, we're taking one more step toward finding our own authenticity and freedom. In this moment, we are remembering who we are and grounding our life in our heart's intention, living the noble life of the Buddha's teaching. Serve what is true, not what is convenient. The intention to not cause harm, create new encounters of the loving kind.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.